In March, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio created the Racial Justice Commission. The purpose of the commission is to examine structural inequities and to propose ballot initiatives that can address structural racism in the city. The commission is empowered to use the power of charter revision, which means they can propose changes to the city's constitution. Last month, they released their first report, identifying six patterns of inequity facing New Yorkers. I spoke with two members of the commission.
My name is Yesenia Mata. I am a commissioner with the Racial Justice Commission.
My name is Jennifer Jones Austin, commissioner and chair of the New York City Racial Justice Commission.
And Yesenia told me how they spoke with local communities to develop their recent report.
The first report is a culmination of a comprehensive citywide public input process. In every borough, we held in-person sessions, virtual sessions, and there was a process for public comment online. So with this, we are asking the community to work very closely with the commission so we can change any sort of structural racism through the charter revision.
Yesenia, say a little bit more about how community was engaged, sort of at various stages of the process. What did it mean to get community together as part of this?
The immigrant community is often forgotten or left out of these conversations. And it was very interesting to see how the commission was also taking into account language, accessibility was taken into account, interpretation was taken into account, all types of backgrounds of the communities. So it was public hearings, it was through virtual Zooms, it was through public online input, it was just constant public input and all types of levels that made this more accessible to the communities. Despite if there was a technology barrier, despite it was a language barrier, the commission ensured that we can be accessible to the community's inputs.
I may just add, we also centered on making sure that the conversations with community members were just that, conversations, that we were not talking at the community, but rather we were hearing from the community and then engaging with them about the issues that they were presenting to us. So it wasn't let's show up in Staten Island or let's come to the Bronx, let's sit in Harlem and tell you what we think will bring about greater equity and end racism. You tell us what you experience on a daily basis. You tell us what your children experience. You tell us, what challenges you. And you also, we want to hear from you what you think would make the difference. So it really wasn't us talking at community, which is what often happens. And that's part of this racist structure in society. It was rather them talking to us.
So tell me, Jennifer, in part, what you found in these conversations, in these engagements where community was having the capacity to, in part, set the agenda. What are the initial reports showing?
Well, first and foremost, what the community was very clear about is that, we often center on racism as tied to policing. And we know that racism, the criminalization of poverty and of race is a constant in this society. We know that's part of the system, right? The system of racism and capitalism and militarism all working in concert to continually oppress people of color. So they talked to us about policing, but they went beyond policing. They understand that racism pervades every pillar of our society, education, healthcare, housing, what is happening in their communities with respect to parks and recreation? Who gets to decide whether or not they have hospitals or, whether they have overabundance of, certain types of facilities that, people in more affluent and predominantly white communities do not want? They helped us to appreciate that they understand racism is not just a policing issue, but it's in every pillar. They talked about inequity in work, in the opportunity to, earn fair and living wages to advance. They talked about how the ever-growing wealth divide keeps them from getting ahead. They talked about inequities in access to basic goods and services, quality goods and services that would bring about greater economic, social, emotional well-being. Being deprived of quality education, healthcare, housing. They talked about the over criminalization of our communities, and the marginalization of our communities. And they talked again about, they talked about not being a part of decision making.
One of the things I like about what you're saying, Jennifer, is this sense that, communities can already identify the problems, right? They already know, what challenges are facing them. But Yesenia, sometimes communities don't know how all of the inside processes of government and bureaucracy work, right? So folks may even know not only the problems, but the solutions they'd like to see. I'm wondering how this process for communities has maybe also just been kind of like a politics 101 class for how city government works.
The community organized, the community at times know the solutions that they need, or they at times need support on how to get either connections with the city or how to go about their final solution when it comes to organizing, but there's never that support, right? So what happened with this commission, which was very interesting, I think how Jennifer touched up on, was that we were there to listen. And when we listened, they would tell us that they needed support. Let's just say they needed more information about this topic. The commissioners, we did provide that information to them. It's a way to help them with their organizing, because organizing can only go so far. It also requires to work with the city. It also requires to work either with elected officials. It also requires to work with commissioners, right? And I think that was beautiful with the commission itself, that we were helping organizers as they were telling us what was it that they needed or what is it that they hoped to see.
If I may just add that one of the things that we did see, and Yesenia touched upon this, and we heard, I should say, is that community members, sometimes they knew what they needed, but they did not necessarily speak about it in like structural law terms. You know, I need a job that pays me a decent wage. I need an opportunity to advance in my job, and I feel like, you know, I keep being held back. That's what we would hear. We'd hear, the Black women in this city government agency, are denied promotions. We need to have an opportunity to be promoted. We need to be seen. So they would speak to us about what they needed sometime, but they wouldn't necessarily translate that into, here's the structural, the underpinning structural law that needs to be addressed. And it is our responsibility as commission members to hear what they're saying, to hear the struggle, to hear, what is needed, but then to figure out what impedes that from happening when you look at the charter. What does the charter say about fair and livable wages? What does the charter say about real access to opportunity? What can we do about that by changing structural laws?
So talk to me about these six patterns of inequity that are operating as barriers for people of color in the city.
We heard about, lack of access to quality goods and services. We heard about an inequity in work advancement and wealth building, the overcriminalization of communities of color and people of color, inequity in representation and decision making. And we also heard about, good things being done, but there never being any follow-up. So we're looking at creating a preamble in the city's charter. What are the basics that every resident of New York should be able to expect? We want to be actionable. So we're going to, look at establishing an Office of Racial Equity that is required to center on the anti-marginalization through agency policies and practices of people of color, that looks at how do we establish a true cost of living in New York City. We know good and well that the poverty level is not a true measure of what it costs for people to live. So we're looking at putting in place something like a true cost of living that the city then has to use as a measure for what it costs for people to live and what we need by way of wages and income supports. And then we want to be accountable. So we're looking at how do we establish within the charter a stand-up structures like a commission that is going to hold the city accountable for developing racial equity plans and then implementing them, putting in place racial equity, racial and gender equity impact analyses, using data, disaggregated data, to see how people are really faring and looking at their agencies and making the reforms that are necessary. Aspirational, actionable, and accountable.
Yesenia, I'm wondering, let me just kind of come to you on the aspirational. What are you hoping will be different 5 years from now, 10 years from now in the city of New York as a result of this work that you've been involved with?
I was able to see from the very beginning how opportunities were taken from both of my parents because they were undocumented. I saw how language also was a barrier for them. I just saw many opportunities that just were taken away from my parents and close relatives and friends. And I always wanted to see change. I wanted to see equality. I wanted to see equity. I wanted to see just everyone thrive, right? It didn't matter their religion, their background, their status. And I understood that at very early on, once I started organizing, that change will not just happen one day to the next, right? It's going to take time. But because of the organizing that we've done as a community, look where we are now. We now have the first ever racial justice commission. I believe there's still more organizing to be done, but this is the beginning. And I do see us in 5 years from now making more progress than where we are now. I do see this, especially this Racial Justice Commission being a platform, a beginning of new things that are going to happen. So what I do hope to see is that this is used as a vehicle for further organizing. I really love how Jennifer said, like, a lot of the time, us organizers are on the ground, are marching, protesting, are holding meetings. However, we don't have the support when it comes to implementing the law. So someone help us navigate the legal system. Someone help us navigate the financial system, right? So I hope that the Racial Justice Commission is the vehicle to help organizers in the community move forward agendas that they need to better their community and in my community, because I do live in a community in the Latino immigrant community. So I do hope that we are able to use this vehicle to further the rights for our communities.
And Jennifer, I'll just come to you finally on that last aspirational question as well. What is your great aspiration? What do you hope will change? What will look different in New York City, say, in 5 or 10 years?
In 5 years, my fervent hope, my prayer, is that community has a greater voice, that they feel empowered, that they see that there is a law that says that they have a right to demand more for themselves, and that government has to be accountable in providing more. That they have, through the changes that are put forward, the opportunity to say, you know, the data here shows that you are discriminating against us. The equity plan here shows that, you know, the policies and the practices, the programs that you put in place, don't go far enough to address and redress all of the harms that have been visited upon Black communities, indigenous persons, other people of color for centuries. I'm really hoping, praying, believing that people develop greater voices through this, and that they feel that there is a law to which they can turn, a structure that says that they have every right to demand more of this government when government is not providing what it should equitably.
Jennifer Jones Austin and Yesenia Mata of the New York City Racial Justice Commission. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.